And we have the privilege to hear some words of sharing, both about Doug and Dottie. We're going to start with a sharing for Dottie, or actually for Doug first. We are going to have Carol Gutbrod share a couple perspectives on Doug to give us a picture and a taste of his life and how he blessed many with his presence.
I feel privileged to convey the words of Doug's Atlanta family. The first is some memories from Brenda Mosley, a very good friend of Doug's. How can I possibly pick a few memories of my dearest friend of 40 years? Have you ever had someone give you a rose garden, white picket fence, and all? I have. We were together almost every weekend, often just sitting quietly as only kindred spirits can do. I'm going to miss my friend. The one I could always talk to and who always listened with a compassionate heart. We first met when he was 22 years old. We both applied for a job at the same company, Brown Boveri, in Pennsylvania. They flew us back to Georgia, but before the big jet came, there was a little hopper plane to the airport, a little two-seater. We sat together and bounced around in wide-eyed fear. We both got the job, and Doug immediately became my best friend. We would eat lunch together and talk about the Bible. We pulled him into our family at once. He loved taking care of my house and yard. We often won Yard of the Month, especially when he put up the Christmas lights. They were spectacular. We had so much fun together, we didn't stop talking about Braveheart for a month. Every year he made my birthdays very special. My children and later my grandchildren were his. He was there at every birth. I had a terrible accident in 1995, and Doug would come after work every night to the hospital, quite a distance away, and read the Bible to me. When I was well enough to sit in a wheelchair, he took me to an annual event, the Renaissance Festival, which we miserably found out was in the woods, no sidewalks, no wheelchair access, but that did not deter him. He pushed me over tree roots, rocks, and mighty rough terrain all day. He was exhausted, but never complained. He loved me unconditionally with a love that all women should know, selfless, humble, giving, and kind. How blessed I was to even know him, and much less have him love me. There are so many memories of so many moves, especially from my daughter. But he was always there to help. We were his family. The fact that he never told anyone of his illness speaks so highly of him. He just didn't want to bother anyone or to be a burden. I will miss him so very, very much. I think about the times that Doug and I went fishing, and he always helped us move or anything physical that we had to do in the family. He was always there for us whenever we went somewhere, including out to eat quite a lot. He was a part of the family. I miss him. I was so glad that Doug was my and our family's friend. I miss him and always will. He's with the Lord now. And she quotes from Isaiah 40, verse 11. He tends his flock like a shepherd. He gathers the lambs in his arms and carries them close to his heart. Our Doug is in the shepherd's arms. This one is from Brenda's granddaughter. Doug was the most selfless person you could ever meet. He was like a grandpa to me. He was there at every holiday, birthday, during springtime, when he planted flowers at my grandma's, when he was putting up Christmas lights at her house. He was just always there. He made sure we were taken care of. He was family. This one is from Brenda's ex-husband, who became good friends, and he and Doug used to go fishing together all the time. One time, quite memorable, when we were all camping down at Lake Seminole in southwest Georgia, and they got stuck in a huge pack of alligators. It took them a while to slowly paddle their way through that one. Next one from Brenda's brother and sister, Wendy and Jeff. We were just so grateful of how he took care of Brenda and Delina. Doug and Wendy both worked at Northside Hospital, and they would pass each other in the elevator quite often. Caitlin Gunter. This is Doug's good friend and a co-worker. On my way to picking you, Trudy, up at the Atlanta airport, I got a call from Mrs. Audrey at my church. She told me how to handle talking with you and how to gather my thoughts and how I wanted to talk with Doug. That night, I woke up at 2 a.m. and had all of these ideas of what I wanted to say to Doug. I called him that morning and told him that I appreciated that he always wanted to take care of others. He never wanted to be a burden to others, to a fault, and that it was noticed and appreciated. He thanked me for everything I was doing, and I told him that I finally had the opportunity to take care of him for a change, and it was a pleasure. I told him about my relationship with God and made sure he knew that if he wasn't right with God, that he needed to take care of that now. I also told him that I knew he was scared and to just close his eyes and think of happy memories, like being on the coast of Oregon flying a kite on the beach. Later that day, I found out he wasn't using his phones, and I knew then that it was God's timing and that I had told him everything. During this whole time, I was reading my daily devotional, and it spoke about how Jesus died on the cross and how Jesus asked, "God, why have you forsaken me?" I thought to myself, maybe this is exactly how Doug must feel, like God has left him and he's all alone. I found out Tuesday night that he went into hospice in a calming place with Trudy, and she was able to be in a recliner all night next to him. Then the next morning I got the call that he had passed. I opened up my daily devotional, and guess what it talked about? How Jesus was risen from the grave. I knew at that moment that it wasn't a coincidence and that Doug is in heaven with your mom flying his kite on the beach or in the clouds. He is risen. The last one is from Jamie Harris, good friend of Doug's. I want to tell you a quick story about your brother Doug. Over the last year, with all that has happened surrounding social injustice, one of our mutual friends was posting some very disturbing comments on Facebook Messenger to all of his friends, including me. I got upset and let him know I would be removing him from my friends. I included Doug in the message so that he was aware of my decision. We all used to get together socializing, so I didn't want him wondering why I wouldn't be attending. Doug immediately responded and told me he was sorry for what our friend had been posting. He didn't agree and completely understood my feelings. That was the friendship I always knew with Doug. He didn't have to say anything, and he may not have had the same beliefs as I did, but he always made sure to be a compassionate and understanding friend. When I found out that he had passed away today, I called my mom and told her. She'd never met Doug, but immediately knew who I was talking about and was sad as if she had lost a friend too. Your brother, Trudy, touched people who had never met him, just being a wonderful person. I pray that you and your family know how much Doug is loved and will be remembered by his work family. Everyone tells you to be strong at times like this. I say be proud.
Now we're going to share some words about Dottie. And to start us off, we're going to invite forward Michael Bow, a fellow Toastmaster with Dottie. Michael?
I had a rough time putting this speech together. So many thoughts and feelings, and I'd barely yet begun to grieve. I got to know Dottie through Toastmasters, which is an organization devoted to honing leadership and public speaking skills. And I know Dottie would have enjoyed this plug. But I suspect many of you here today are not Toastmasters, and what can I offer that will honor Dottie's memory best? What she best exemplified for me these last few years is perseverance. Dottie set a great example of strength through adversity. She was in our club for several years. As she began to struggle with her various health problems and the usual deficiencies that come with aging, they slowed her down, but she never let them stop her. She eventually became confined to a wheelchair, but if the wheelchair confined her body, it did not confine her spirit. I often provided her transportation to club meetings. I would meet her at the door sometimes, and sometimes she seemed like a wilted flower in her wheelchair, sagged down. And on the drive to the meeting, we would talk, and her speech might be a little halting or slurred, But once she got to the meeting room, she always perked up, and she was always ready to give her all when she was speaking. Seeing everyone always brought a smile to her face. She started losing some of her vocal power, but she didn't give up on her voice. I saw her on more than one occasion start off a speech with kind of a low and raspy tone, but she would realize that, and you could see her gather herself up, and she would belt out the rest of her speech the best she could, sometimes with remarkable success, other times less so, but always managing to make an improvement, always giving the best effort she could. When we transitioned to online meetings last year, Dottie was not discouraged from attending. She had struggles with the technology, as we all do. Dottie had to deal with new tablets, using her phone sometimes when her tablet wasn't working, and sometimes just doing it with a phone call because her phone app wasn't working either. She sought help from club members, from family, and from the staff at the caring place where she lived. She did what she could to keep engaged with the club. In Toastmasters, speakers are given a specified amount of time to give their speeches. Then one member, the timer, usually gives a visual indication to help the speaker stay on track. It always amazed us members when Dottie would be on just a phone call, she would always manage to stay on her targets for time, even without having a visual clue. Throughout her decline, Dottie rarely complained about her health to me. Sometimes she would grumble about missing a meeting because of a doctor's appointment, but that was as close as it came. She dealt with her other physical liabilities as best she could, and she did not invite pity. Dottie brought enthusiasm and energy to the club. Several months ago, she was asked to speak for a couple minutes on what she had planned for the coming weekend. She burst out with excitement because her family had arranged to rent a special wheelchair that had fat tires that could go on the beach. She was going to the coast tomorrow, and she was excited to let you know about it. I suspect I was not the only club member that day that felt a twinge of joyful envy of Dottie and her beach trip. I spent at most a couple hours a week with Dottie the last few years, and I only knew her for 8, not during her prime. But in that limited time, I saw her approach her mortality with the grace and high spirits, with generosity, with love for her family, with enthusiasm that as much energy as she could muster. She set a great example of embracing the life the Lord gives you and making the most of it. Dottie, we love you, and we'll miss you to the end of our days.
Thank you, Michael. We'll now hear from Patty Scar. Is Patty here?
Actually, Patty Scare, but that's okay.
Patty Scare.
I'm the president of the Mary's Peak Orchid Society, and I was very honored to know Dottie. Can you hear me okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, hopefully that's better. Without Dottie Farrell, there would be no Mary's Peak Orchid Society. Simple as that. Sometime in 1992 or 1993, Ella May and met Dottie Farrell. They immediately recognized each other as kindred spirits in their joint love of orchids. Ella May and Dottie joined the Cherry City Orchid Society and for many years drove together to its meetings. Ella May drove because Dottie was a terror on the road, at least to her. They gave up attending the Orchid Society meetings in Newport fairly soon after one too many foggy night road trips. Ella May was a little surprised that Dottie wanted to start an Orchid Society in Corvallis when there were already Orchid Societies in Salem, Newport, and Eugene, a mere hour's drive north, west, or south, respectively. In Connecticut, there was only one Orchid Society, and folks thought nothing of driving 2 hours each way to a meeting. Dottie explained that in Corvallis, people don't want to have to drive that far at night. Indeed, when the first meetings of MPOS, that's Mary's Peak Orchid Society, were held a few miles down south of town, some grumbled that it was too far away. At one of the CCOS meetings, Jim remembers Dottie announcing that she was planning to start a new society in Corvallis. He said, "There really wasn't any doubt that she would succeed. When she decided to do something, she was a force of nature. Dottie gathered together a small group of like-minded people and made the new Mary's Peak Orchid Society happen. Ella May was in Connecticut during the first meeting, thus not a founding member, but joined at its second meeting, as did Lisa Borgerson, and Jim Snyder was an early member too. Dottie's energy was endless, perhaps fueled by the infinite number of cups of coffee she drank. Even in the evening, no decaf for her. She soon had the fledgling society participating in all sorts of events and putting on an annual MPOS exhibit at the Benton County Fair for many years, while she was also the head of the flower setup and judging for the floral pavilion. She was a strong, dynamic woman who could take charge of a project and see it through. Dottie made sure to recruit people like Jim, who put in an orchid display for the fair. She was very persuasive. Even in the years when putting together a display for the fair, in which Jim's plants would suffer in the August heat and dryness, he just couldn't say no to Dottie. Jim notes that she was the kind of woman who could inspire loyalty, even in a curmudgeon like him. Dottie was not shy. She championed the society, and anyone who passed the MPOS fair exhibit soon found themselves chatting with Dottie and maybe even joining MPOS. At one point, after Dottie and Ella May created a MPOS show exhibit for a Western Orchid Congress in Portland, they decided that MPOS should have its own show. That first show was held at the Heritage Mall in Albany and was the grand forerunner of today's much smaller shows. At society meeting, Dottie's luck during plant raffles was legendary. She invariably won a plant or three, even though most of the rest of us usually went without. Of course, Dottie always bought oodles of raffle tickets to support the society, so maybe it really isn't so surprising that she was frequently a winner. Dottie Farrell had five children. Mark, her youngest, was always interested in the natural world and introduced Dottie to orchid growing. When he died of leukemia in his 20s, Dottie took over caring for his orchids and then took his orchid interest many steps further, becoming an orchid ambassador. She always grieved his loss, but through orchids, she could honor her son's memory. When friends pass away, it hurts. But at least Dottie missed her chance to die young. We should all be so lucky. The society owes her a lot, and those who knew Dottie the longest owe her the most. The Mary's Peak Orchid Society is her legacy. We all benefit from it. That's all. I feel very honored to have known Dottie.
And one more person to share today, and that's Andrea Galvin. We'll have her share some words about Dottie as well. Andrea, please come on up.
Hi, everyone. My name's Andrea, and I knew Dottie from attending church here at Peace Lutheran. Growing up, I didn't really have the presence of grandparents in my life, but I started attending this church when I was 5 years old, and there were many older ladies and gentlemen who took interest in me. I'm gonna take this off, actually. And they were like surrogate grandparents to me. And not to discount any of those relationships, because they were all valuable, but I think it's easy to care and connect with a young child and then be there for them as they grow up. But I didn't meet Dottie until I was 14 years old. And even though I was a teenager, she was immediately invested in getting to know me. And she seemed genuinely interested in who I was. This really stood out to me because for many people, myself included, being a young teenager can be a really insecure time in your life. I was struggling with identifying what value I was adding to the world, and right off the bat, Dottie made me feel valuable. When she first started coming, I got to know her through various connections. For a while, she taught the Sunday school class that I was in, which was small. There were like 2 to 3 of us. and she would take us out to New Morning Bakery in the mornings and ask us questions that were real. They weren't just scripted Bible study questions. She was one of the first people in my life who challenged me to explore what my faith really meant, that it wasn't just a list of rights and wrongs, but a complex relationship with God and my community, which in turn affects the world and the people around me. Dottie invited me to work at the fair with her in the flower section each summer, which I did, and I had a blast doing with her. She did choir with me. She got me this little waitressing gig for a dinner party with her friends in high school. And she would always give me makeup tips as a fellow redhead. But the thing that strikes me about Dottie is how, right from the beginning, she always lit up when I walked into the room. And I'm not sure I can think of another person, aside from my own mother, that seems so happy to see me every week. And at a time when you're questioning what good you are, to have someone in your life who makes you feel like you bring true joy to the table is a remarkable trait. It made me wonder what she saw in me that I couldn't even see in myself. But I've been reading and hearing other people's stories about Dottie, and I realized it wasn't about me at all. That is just how Dottie treated people. She made everyone feel special. So I challenge us today, in honor of Dottie, to remember to show the people in your life just how much you love them, fully and unabashedly, to not hold back in fear of judgment, but to know that your outward showing of love is beyond powerful. Thanks.